sales win rates have plummeted to a mere 17%, and outdated technology and tedious manual processes are to blame. Meanwhile, managers lack the visibility they need to hold their teams accountable. But imagine a world in which these crippling issues are solved automatically. Revenue.io automates the most frustrating parts of sales so reps can focus on what they do best, selling. Completely automate pre-call research, logging conversation data in your CRM, writing post-conversation recap emails, and prioritized outreach. And as reps book more meetings and close more deals, managers gain the real-time insight they need to scale what's working across their entire team. Ready to say goodbye to tedious sales processes and watch your win rate soar? Head over to revenue.io to learn more.
First of all, your team looks exactly the way you want it to. Either you are intentional about diversity or intentionally not doing diversity. Either way, if you really wanted to do something about diversity, then your leadership team would mirror the team that you want. You can't have one race, one gender in your leadership team and then say, well, we're going to have a whole bunch of sales reps, SDRs and BDRs that are 50% ethnically diverse. It doesn't work that way.
Hi, friends. Welcome to the Sales Enablement Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Paul. That is Cynthia Barnes. Cynthia is the founder and CEO of the National Association of Women Sales Professionals. And she's also the author of a new book titled The Cure: How Diversity and Equity Will Fix Your Sales Culture and Boost Profits. In our conversation today, Cynthia and I talk about some of the key findings from her book, including studies that show that on average, women sales professionals perform at higher levels than their male counterparts. Studies that also show how more diverse organizations perform at higher levels, in fact, 19% higher on average. We also dig into some of the persistent myths that exist about women in sales, like women can't sell to men, for instance. Then we explore some of the specific strategies that Cynthia recommends companies use to increase diversity and, in particular, hire more women into sales. So we get into all of this and much, much more. But before we get to Cynthia, I want to remind you to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. So thank you for that. All right, let's jump into it with Cynthia Barnes. Cynthia, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. How you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing well. How about yourself?
If I were any better, there'd be two of me.
Oh, I love that expression. I don't think I've heard that before. I wish I could say that. I am just getting over COVID, which I was very fortunate. Symptoms weren't very severe. Good. But sort of the lingering fatigue and they talk about, you know, one of the symptoms being brain fog. Mm. I had that in spades. That was the symptom I had. And it,
oh, wow.
It was hard to do serious work for a couple of weeks.
I'll bet.
Because it was just like, yeah, you just had this big, I don't know, what a cloud of fog, as they said, that just made it hard to, I felt like I could work for like 3 or 4 hours and I'd get really tired, you know, mentally, end up taking a lot of naps and so on. So, but fortunately, I'm just back to my usual foggy self, not as foggy as I was. So, but otherwise,
I'm
not
glad
bad.
You're feeling better.
Well, thank you. So, tell people about you and the work you do.
Oh, that's a loaded question. Let's see.
Well, I know you've got a lot on your plate, but yeah.
Yes, yes. I will pick one plate, and I'm a woman in sales influencer, and I help women who sell B2B services reach the top 1%. Founder and CEO of National Association of Women Sales Professionals. I'm also a keynote speaker and 2-time author.
There you go. Love it. So what, I mean, there's a number of, you know, organizations for women sales professionals. What prompted you to start yours, and maybe how's the mission aligned or slightly different from some of the others?
Yeah, we are the oldest, most diverse, and largest women in sales organization, started back in 2016. Mm-hmm. And we help women reach that top 1% with training, coaching, professional development, and mentoring, all created by women for women.
And so how big of membership?
Our membership is currently around 15,000.
Wow. Okay. That's a lot of people. And I think I read the figure somewhere. I hadn't realized quite that large. So is there a specific concentration in terms of industry? And is it primarily tech, or is it spread across all industries?
We specialize in helping women who sell business-to-business services, B2B services. So we don't really have a lot of members in retail or B2C services.
Got it. So was there, some event that happened that, triggered this idea that, wow, here's a resource that's really missing, that's really needed?
Yeah. In 2016, I was working in corporate America at a logistics company. And I said, I really want to leave corporate America. I'm tired of selling. And I was talking with my coach, and he said, Cynthia, it takes a lot more fuel to get the airplane in the air than it does to keep it in the air. So realize that if you take a total new direction, you're going to have to start from the bottom. And I thought, I've got too many years of experience to start at the bottom, to learn something new, to become an expert in another field. So I said, well, what do I know how to do? Answer, I know how to sell. How can I run a business or start a business selling? But where I come from, they say there's only two functions within a company, someone to make it and someone to sell it. So I figure I've got half of this thing licked. One of my friends came from San Francisco with the Lean Startup Company, and he said, come up with a hypothesis and then either prove it or disprove it. So my hypothesis was, in a world where traditional sales approaches were created by men for men at a time when men made up the entire sales force, nothing wrong with them because I got to the top 1% using them. I wanted to know, though, how much faster could women reach the top 1% if we had sales approaches that address the unique challenges we face while amplifying our innate strengths. So I proved it, got proof of concept, and here we are.
Interesting. Well, let's go back. So why were you tired of selling? What was it? Just the lifestyle? Was it with the products you were selling, or the lack of support for management, or what was it in particular?
It was the culture I was in. The logistics industry and the company I worked for had a motto or a credo, if you will, that we were on call and available to our customers 24/7, 365. Mm-hmm. And they took that very seriously and literally.
Right.
And what I found was that the larger my book of business became, the more I was on call and had to be available, i.e. the less I slept.
Right.
So I did not want that type of lifestyle going forward. And I said, I'm tired of selling. And unfortunately, I'd lumped every selling job into that one. But I was tired, literally and figuratively.
Yeah, well, I mean, I could certainly get that way. I mean, I probably had similar motivations when I started my own company years ago. I was certainly tired of what I was doing.
Yes.
Which involved incessant traveling, right? I was traveling 300,000 miles a year around the world. And as I tell people, being overseas and doing business with people in different cultures and companies or countries was a lot of fun. Unfortunately, you had to fly to get there and back.
Yeah.
And that part really took a toll. I'd missed a daughter's birthday, for instance. So I was like, I'm not going to do that anymore.
No, it's not worth it.
No, it wasn't worth it. So I made the decision, take a step back and start my own company.
Good for you.
So you've published a new book called The Cure, How Diversity and Equity Will Fix Your Sales Culture and Boost Profits. And you've alluded to this before, is talking about, women are trained, everybody are trained to sell like white men, basically. There's so much wrong with that. But we have this desire seemingly in sales to make people want to conform to a certain model. And it doesn't seem like it's getting less like that. It seems like the pressure to conform is getting greater.
I think yes and. there are those who train new sales reps in the way in which they were trained because they don't know any differently. Mm-hmm. So if you take a look at the bookshelves in your local bookstore of sales books, they primarily look like, the authors primarily look the same.
Yeah, they look like me.
then we have those who wonder, what if?
Right.
Instead of having, or you can do this, or you can do this, there are those of us who say, what about and? You have the traditional sales approaches, and you have another way to sell as well. You can now pick which one is best for you. So yes, to your point, I guess it depends on the lens through which you look. AWS, go ahead.
No, go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to step in. Go ahead.
Oh, those in an AWSP say, you know what? There's another way. And now I get to choose which way works best for me. And now they're influencing their managers to go from you're selling differently, i.e. that's wrong, to you're selling differently and different doesn't mean wrong.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. I mean, I think that's 100%. I mean, it's sort of a theme of my latest book as well, which is that if there's 5 million salespeople in the world, there are 5 million unique ways to sell, and it's really the job of the manager to say, how can I help you become the best version of you?
Yes, absolutely.
And as opposed to have you be just like John or mm-hmm. Jennifer or whatever. Right. And that's why I was talking about conformity, because that's, I think for many managers, and I was just having this conversation with a guest on my show right before we recorded this interview, is for many managers, they're so bound up in this idea that their job as a sales manager, his job is about the numbers and the data and reporting, that they're sort of fearful of people who are different mm-hmm. because it requires more work from them.
Yes. And if you think back, our whole country has been founded on some of the fears and some of the stereotypes and some of the biases are based in fear. Mm-hmm. People don't like what they're not familiar with. Mm-hmm. Very few people are willing to say, here's a different way to look at something. Let me investigate it. They revert back to their comfort level. So it's human nature.
Yeah. Yeah, no, but it's so true. I mean, sales needs to change, but the way to change is to incorporate different points of view, different life experiences, different perspectives, other than sort of the path we've been marching down. Because quite frankly, where we are today isn't a very good spot in sales in terms of just an overall performance standpoint. And, you know, resisting the fact that we need change isn't helping.
And you know what? It's not going to change until we change the face of sales leadership. Mm-hmm. Because when you have those in sales leadership who have subscribed to the it's not broke, don't fix it type of mentality versus those who say if it's not broken, keep working, mm-hmm. then it will always be the same. However, there are those out there who challenge the status quo and say, why not? How can I ... fill in the blank?
Right.
So I'm hopeful.
Well, good. I mean, we want people to be hopeful about it. I mean, it's the data. Yes, yeah, not very encouraging at this moment. I mean, I think I read like roughly 65% of all B2B sales jobs are held by white males, which is an overrepresentation by a significant amount. So yeah, obviously we have still a lot of work. Just the work is just starting. A lot of work to do to change things. So you talk about, and you start your book really boldly, sort of saying, hey, we need more women in sales, which wholeheartedly agree with. And the thing that, and you allude to this, and I've seen studies about this. One in particular came out of the insurance industry saying that, yeah, based on the research, women outperform men in sales. Mm-hmm. And if you're a sales leader and you see that, right, it's like, you think, okay, gosh, people always talk about salespeople being coin operated, right? I mean, if you're a mm-hmm. sales manager and you're paid on performance and you saw that data, which is available, why wouldn't you make it your life's work to hire more women to sales? Because it'll make you more successful.
Short answer, it takes work.
Well, yeah.
To hire women in sales. Not that they're not out there. Number one, you have to go where they are. I tell our partners all the time who want to recruit high-achieving women in sales, if you're looking for a trucker, you go to trucker.com. If you're looking for diverse female sales candidates, then let's have a conversation. So number one, you have to go where they are. Number two, before you even do that, you've got to think about your culture. If you're having beer drop Fridays and cornhole competitions and ping pong and local events at the happy hour, you have to look and see, does the majority of my female sales staff enjoy doing those things? There are some who do, and that's great. However, if your female sales staff does not enjoy the bro culture, then there's an opportunity to create a culture of belonging where everyone feels like they belong.
Yeah, I mean, and so the first step to doing that is... and you talk about this as, for instance, you know, look at how you recruit.
Yes.
Right. I mean, the job descriptions that you still see out there for sales jobs, I mean, still lean very heavy into sort of these macho terms about, you know, hunters and closers and which, first of all, just complete nonsense. And, but even more importantly is buyers don't want people or hunters or closers.
No.
You know, they want people who can help them get their jobs done. They want people who can be curious and open-minded and are, you know, problem solvers. And that doesn't tend to come from that population if you're trying to say hunter closer types.
Right. And buyers, believe it or not, are looking at your staff, your leadership team, to see whether or not they are represented in your staff.
Absolutely.
I spent 2 hours yesterday looking for a firm to handle a project that we're working on at NAWSP. Mm-hmm. And every time I would go to the About Us section where they had the pictures and profiles of their team members, not once did I see anyone who looked like me.
Right.
And that screams volumes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's such a sort of basic acid test, right? Mm-hmm. Are they even making an effort at that point?
They're not.
No. And so this is part of, you know, I talk to companies about this and say, you know, how you put yourself out there, that is your brand, right? Mm-hmm. You're creating a brand among your sales team.
Yes.
And what do you want that to be?
Exactly. Exactly. I may have to put that on LinkedIn tomorrow.
That's fine. I mean, it's there whether you're trying to create one or not, but hopefully you are trying to be intentional. To your point about creating an outward facing team that looks like the people you're selling to.
And you know what? If you're, first of all, your team looks exactly the way you want it to.
Well, yeah, of course.
Either you are intentional about diversity or intentionally not doing diversity. Either way, if you really wanted to do something about diversity, then your leadership team would mirror the team that you want. You can't have one race, one gender in your leadership team and then say, well, we're going to have a whole bunch of sales reps, SDRs and BDRs that are 50% ethnically diverse. It doesn't work that way.
Well, it looks like also that this has become a little more challenging, even though there's much more attention being focused to DEI over the last several years. But the fact is that, you know, during the pandemic, that large numbers of women, including in sales, left the workforce you know, for a variety of reasons, whether it's, you know, at-home schooling and so on. And some of these reasons are being addressed, but, you know, it still existed. We lost a tremendous number. I forget the number. I think the lowest, I said the participation in the workforce by women was down to the level it was back in the 80s.
So what if we shifted that statement to say, instead of we lost them, we didn't create opportunities for them to stay?
Oh, yeah. Right.
Because there were some companies out there that went above and beyond and said, okay, we realize that single mothers will leave our company if they don't have money for childcare, if they don't have someone to deliver the schooling. There are some companies who said, you know what, we're going to go move away from the FaceTime requirement. As long as you, XYZ employee, get your work done, it doesn't matter what time of day you do it. Women are highly responsible, especially those who are single mothers, to tell them that they have to be on camera or in their seat from 8 until 5 Eastern Standard Time is unfair. However, if you were to say, as long as you get your work done, it could be at 2 o'clock in the morning, we don't care.
Well, but that's the point I was making about sales, is it's like the culture has changed. I mean, when I got started in sales, which admittedly was a long time ago, but that was the whole ethos. Yeah, mm-hmm. I was explicitly told by a boss early on, is like, yeah, you get your job done and you're hitting your numbers and you're working 2 hours a day. Love it. Right?
Yeah.
It's your business. Mm-hmm. I was explicitly told, you're the CEO of your book of business.
Yes.
Work accordingly. Mm-hmm. But that, to your point, that seems to have really dissipated.
Yeah.
And I think that's partially, you know, the impact of technology, because now there's so much more transparency into what mm-hmm. every action sellers are taking, and managers can see everything and hear everything, that, yeah, I think people feel, yeah, not that they can, you know, if I could get my job done 4 hours a day, I'll do it, but I need to actually work more.
Yes. Yes. That's unfortunate too.
Yeah. Yeah. We're so in love with our fascination with work in this country is a little crazy.
Yeah. We wear burnout and busyness like a badge. We glorify the grind.
Yeah. Which doesn't help anybody.
No.
And
it does a huge disservice to those of us who want peace and to get paid at the same time.
Yeah. Which again, you should be able to do. I mean, I still think sales is that profession. Part of the reason you should want to go into sales mm-hmm. is having the flexibility in your work routine. But again, we serve, along with the line we talked about conformity, is where managers not only want to enforce conformity mm-hmm. in terms of how people act and talk and so on, but also in terms of, you know, the things they do and the number of things they do and the quantity of things they do, which becomes more important than actually the outcomes of what they do.
Exactly. And the outcome should be the primary driver. I would love for sales managers to say, here is your goal. How you get there, as long as it's legal, moral, and ethical, I don't care how you get there.
Yeah.
But most managers don't trust enough to let that happen.
Well, it's the fear thing.
It is the fear thing.
Right?
It's the fear thing.
Because if I know you're all doing the same thing, and we don't hit our number, at least I could tell my boss, well, we're doing the right things, quote unquote, right things.
Yes.
Whereas, yeah, and this is the story of my book, is because subtitle my book, Sell Without Selling Out, subtitle, A Guide to Success on Your Own Terms, mm-hmm. is, yeah, you have to take ownership of how you sell.
You do.
No one cares about you as much as you do. So, yeah. Experiment. Try new things.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Hold yourself accountable. You still have to make your numbers. That's fine.
Sure.
But as long as you're doing that, yeah, give you the autonomy and the freedom to experiment and try something that seems to work better for you.
Yeah. You know what they say? Nothing beats a failure but a try.
Well, one thing you talk about in the book, which is interesting, is, and I don't know, this just isn't in my mind, so maybe I'd be a bit naive, but you're saying that there's this myth that some men hold that women can't sell to men.
Mm. Yeah.
I mean, do you encounter that?
Yes. Yes. It's the, you don't understand or you're not relatable enough.
Oh, well, okay.
Yeah. And I have to overcome that, even in my role.
Mm-hmm.
even in my role, I was told in the very beginning of NAWSP that the majority of partners who wanted to partner with us would be of another race and another gender. So I should therefore have someone who matched that race and gender makeup represent my company to them.
Crazy.
Crazy, right?
Well, yeah. The thing is, you know, you say it's a myth that women in sales can't sell to men, but when you look at what's happening in the B2B world, where, you know, we get multiple reports showing that 56% of sellers don't hit their quota, you could make the case that men can't sell to men either.
I'd probably get a whole bunch of hate mail if I did that.
No, I don't think so. yeah. I mean, it's we're sort of in this little bit of a downward spiral, I think, in a lot of B2B sales. And the only solution is change.
Yes.
And change in terms of, well, we've talked about several of the aspects that need to change, but there's this resistance, and you know, it's part of, you know, you're obviously part of that movement to change. You know, I'm trying to make people move forward and change too, because it's just not working.
That is true. There is a lot of work to do. And sometimes I sit and I think, am I making a difference? Is the sacrifice, the blood, sweat, tears, time, energy, resources that I have poured into this movement, am I making a difference? And then I'll get an inbox message from a young Black woman who will say, Cynthia, I never saw a successful Black woman in sales until I saw you. Mm. Or my 10-year-old niece who will tell her mom, well, why can't I? Auntie does.
Right.
So to know that I'm changing the world little by little, leaving a legacy so that my niece doesn't have to go in front of a boardroom full of men and encounter the same bias I do. That's what keeps me going. And also knowing that there's so much work to do. I encountered a CEO who was frustrated with the whole DE&I movement. And
frustrated how?
Frustrated because it's something that he didn't want to do, but in the advent of the new landscape, he knew it was the thing to do. The nouveau riche, if you will.
It was a checkbox.
A checkbox, yes. And I always say that diversity is beyond the checkbox. But he said something that broke my heart. It enraged me at first, but it broke my heart later because I thought, this is how so many others think and feel. They just don't have the guts to say it. He said, if I'd known how much trouble they were going to be, I would have picked the cotton myself.
What?
Yes. Yes.
What?
Yes. I had to look at the calendar and say, wait.
No, I was going to say, this was recent? This was
yes.
Like 50 years ago?
No. Which told me one thing. It told me a couple of things. But number one, nobody on his team who has heard him say that before or something right. similar has ever checked him to say, you know what, Bob? That's not right. And Bob's not his real name. But that's not the right attitude. Or we can't say things like that. Number two, you want to have a culture of belonging.
Cynthia, yes. Just to introduce, I mean, I'm a little extreme on some of this stuff, but I don't know. I would have posted about that. That's so egregious.
Yes, it is.
That, you know, there have been examples where women rightfully called out men. We had Rachel May on the show, works with Keenan and his group that, mm-hmm. you know, had to absorb this appalling behavior from a man she called on a sales call, and she name checked him and LinkedIn and called him out.
Yeah.
Deserved it. 100%.
100%.
Guy's just complete total asshole.
Yes.
Right. When you get stuff like this is I know it's easy for me to say, but I mean, is it like, you feel your fingers going to the keyboard to say, look, this enough?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I type it up and I say, okay, I can only have 2,500 characters in a LinkedIn post. Maybe I should do a video. And I'm hurt. I'm hurt. I am enraged. And I think, How can I get back at him? How can I expose him? How can I show the world how awful he is? And then I take a step back and I say, that's not my platform. That's not my place. How is it that I can influence him to change his mindset for the sake of his company and the culture of his company? That's the approach I took. I wanted to blast him. I wanted to use my platform and my 30-some thousand followers to call out bad behavior.
Mm.
I really wanted to.
I just sometimes think that's, I know people are going to hate this when I say it, but I sometimes think, yeah, sometimes people deserve to be canceled.
They do. However, am I the one that is, I'm not the persecutor. I would rather go in and try to influence a shift change, a mindset shift change. Ultimately, it's on him whether or not he wants to change the culture of his organization. I would be remiss in my role if I didn't point out and say, you know what? Could we look at this through a lens that's a little fresher? That's my approach.
Were you able to have that conversation with him?
Yes.
Oh, okay. So tell us about that. That's great.
It did not go well. And even well, though, yeah,
front,
and even
front,
though,
you wouldn't expect it to, but yeah.
Even though I came with all of my sugar and spice and everything nice, you know, sometimes a man convinced against his will is of the same opinion still.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you just can't get people to change their mindset if they don't want to. But right. I can rest my head on my pillow knowing that I did everything within my power to try to get him to look through this lens that's a little different than his narrow-minded, antiquated, racist belief system.
Yeah.
And I feel sorry for him. I really do.
Yeah, I mean, it is shocking still, the number of comments like that you hear.
Yeah.
I guess I shouldn't be surprised. When you look what's happening in the world at large, in our society,
right.
And
mm-hmm.
and yeah, clearly, you know, large group of people that still, you know, would adopt that, but it's still shocking in the business world.
Yeah.
It's not like, yeah. Oy, I'm so sorry.
Vengeance is not mine.
No, it's just, yeah, I'm a huge believer that, you know, right wins out in the long run.
It always does. It always does. Yes.
And it's worth being positive and optimistic about that. But mm-hmm. it's that sometimes the offense is so egregious that, I mean, I've had to call out clients that said things to me,
mm-hmm.
not about me, but about other people, other races. And you just can't let it pass, I think, at this point.
Mm-hmm. No, he was checked behind behind closed doors. Mm-hmm. I believe in criticizing and bringing up issues behind closed doors rather than publicly. There are others who differ, and they would have done it publicly. However, for Cynthia Barnes, that's the approach that I took, and I'm comfortable with that approach. And I can only hope and pray that I made a difference in his thinking, no matter how small it was.
Yeah. Well, I've probably been like you. I probably have written up the email and not sent it, but would have felt better for having written it. Or the LinkedIn post. Well, another interesting point in the book, and this has come up in conversations I've had with other women who, you know, trying to change the equation relative to diversity in sales, is one of the things you talk about is it's really important to be able to track women's performance with an eye toward progress.
Yes.
And career progression. Because I think, again, back to this checkbox mentality, it's like, okay, hired a woman, check the box. Or hired a woman of color, check the box.
Check two boxes. Yep.
Check two boxes. But then don't do enough to mentor, for instance. I mean, the difficulty of finding a mentor. How are we helping people of color that come into sales, women that come into sales, to give them the resources to help them advance?
Yes. We took a look at those things. And number one, we are launching a full scale metric driven KPI enhanced mentoring system. It's more than just a point, click, and match. It actually has metrics that you and your mentor decide on, and then we measure those quarterly to see how you're coming along with those so that you can go back to your leadership and say, I helped a mentee accomplish this, and here's the proof, or I'm a mentee and my mentor helped me accomplish this. So we want data-driven, tangible, measurable success and metrics. Second thing I encourage managers to do is to take a look at segment your team and measure the performance of the men versus the women. If the women are not performing to the level that the men are, or vice versa, the data don't lie. So find out why those groups are different. Does one group need training? Does one group need mentoring, coaching, whatever it is? If that subset group is not performing as well as your top performers, that's a key that there's something is wrong.
Well, interesting on that is, do you think HR would feel comfortable with people tracking data by gender?
I think they have to. They have to. It's the mindset that, well, we can't do that, or we can't have a campaign to hire Black women. Well, you know what? Either you do and you're intentional about diversity, right, or the status quo will remain.
Yeah. Oh, no, I can see. The reason I asked the question is because I've see HR departments throwing their hands up and saying, oh, we can't do that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah. Well, how else do you track progress?
Exactly. You can't improve what's not measured.
Yeah. Back to Peter Drucker.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. And so other thing you talked about in the book, among other things that I thought was interesting, is you talked about reasons you're having trouble hiring women in sales. And you cite six reasons. One, again, it's all about being intentional, and a lot of companies aren't intentional about this. You're talking about your company's social media presence as an advertisement for your bro culture. Mm-hmm. Yeah, see that on multiple occasions.
Yes.
And I think people are just blind to it.
They're accepting because that's the traditional sales, they've always seen it that way.
Yeah. The second reason you have is your job descriptions lack gender neutrality. We talked about that before. I said, in this day and age, it's still stunning to me that people think that that the words they use don't have an impact on people searching for jobs.
Exactly. I'll give you a prime example. We worked with a company who said one of the requirements in the job is you must be able to regularly lift 40 pounds. I don't know many women in sales who would want to do that. So we took a look at what it is that the sales rep would be lifting. And it was a tire. Okay. A tire.
Are they selling tires?
They were selling tires, yes.
Okay.
Those agricultural tires, or they're small, like semi-tires and things like that. Right. So we went out to the field and we asked sales reps, how often do you lift a tire? And they said, we don't lift tires. We put it on its edge and we roll it.
Right.
So little tweaks like that, that you wouldn't think that's necessarily male or female, that statement alone, must be able to regularly lift 40 pounds, disqualified women because they didn't want to do that on a regular basis.
Well, but it was meant to be exclusionary.
Yes.
Yeah, yes. That was intentional. I mean, that was not, oh, you need to lift tires. That was no. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Maybe once somebody lifted a tire, it's like, well, women can't do that.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's crazy. I'm surprised they didn't say in your business suit.
Yes.
So you say interview panels lack diversity. I mean, clearly if you're upper management has no diversity, yeah, your interview panels are going to lack it as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sales leadership team all looks the same. We talked about. So this one's interesting. You said your hiring and onboarding practices promote isolation. So tell me what you mean by that.
So it's bad enough being the only woman on the team, the only Black on the team, the only Asian American on the team. So when you onboard me and I'm the only one, from day one, I feel isolated. So the way around that is onboard in pairs or groups of three. So you start to, they can form their little ERG, if you will, so that they don't go through the onboarding process alone. But the moment you have an onboarding class, let's say it's 10, and you have one black and you have one woman, and they're the only one. Yes, you've hit your diversity metrics, but how are they feeling about being welcomed into the company where no one looks like them?
Right. Yeah, no, I interview a woman on the show who's a senior sales leader at a quite large company and talks about she'd started in sales, then left, and she got hired into a sales role because when she showed up for the first day on the job, it was like, no one looks like me.
Yeah. No one looks like me.
Yeah. So when you're saying pair people up is, as you said, you hire, you know, one person of color, one woman, it's, you're not saying pair them up.
No, I'm saying hire.
Yeah. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was, have more than one woman, have more than one African-American, have more than, you know, just don't have your tokens. Nobody wants to be a token.
Well, it doesn't really address the goal of being diverse.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. So, it feels false. It feels like, okay, we did the bare minimum. We got one in. We hit our goal for the quota, for the quarter. How is that supposed to make anyone feel special? How is that supposed to make anyone feel like they belong?
Right. Well, you know, there's still this also prevailing mentality out there, and I've encountered just in the last couple of years with a company I was working with that maybe a little longer than 2 years ago, but it had been a consulting client, and we were talking about this issue and trying to address this with the sales leader, and but, you know, they sort of got stuck in this false narrative about, you know, we're hiring the best available person for the job. And you talk about this in the book, too, the sort of false narrative around the meritocracy.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So tell us about that.
So when I hear that we're just hiring the best person for the job, my first question is, why does the diverse nature of a candidate and the best person for the job, why are they mutually exclusive? You say you want diversity on your team, yet you allow your hiring managers to fall back on their excuses. We're just hiring the best person for the team. Mm-hmm. When in actuality, if your pipeline is full of highly qualified, diverse candidates, then your hiring managers, your talent acquisition folks, have people to choose from. It's when you have one or two peppercorns in a jar full of salt where it's easy to say, well, we don't have any qualified candidates and we're going to choose the best one for the job. Well, you only had two to choose from in the first place.
Right.
Well, I mean, I don't accept a lot of excuses.
No. And this gets back to an issue that I think most people don't really focus on, which is a lot of it's about access to opportunity.
Yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like, okay, where are you recruiting?
Right.
Right. Oh, we're only going to go to the top schools. So we're only going to go. It's like, why would you go just recruit there?
Exactly.
I mean, if sales teaches you anything, it's that given the right opportunity, people, anybody can succeed in the profession practically. I've seen it.
Exactly. Yes.
Right. So you need to broaden the access to the opportunity and be a little less. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, the tech world is particularly bad about this. You know, we only hire from the top schools. It's like, so what's that have to do with anything?
Exactly. You'll keep getting what you always have. But it also goes back to the leaders of those tech companies who were not exposed to diversity in their youth, in their college years. They are not comfortable with diversity. Now it's just it's something to do.
Yeah. All right. Still a lot of work to be done.
Yes, there's opportunity everywhere. Yeah. Everywhere. Yes.
Everywhere. All right. So if people want to learn more about NAWSP, National Association of Women Sales Professionals. Yes. Where can they do that?
NAWSP.org.
Perfect. And connect with you, Cynthia Barnes.
On LinkedIn. Yes, LinkedIn, please.
Yes, she's active on LinkedIn. So, Cynthia, pleasure to have you here.
And thank you so much
for having
me.
Forward to talking again soon.
Yes, please. Let's make it sooner rather than later.
All right. Take care.
You too.
Okay, friends, that's it for this episode. First of all, I want to thank you for taking the time to listen. I'm so grateful for your support of the show. And I want to thank my guest, Cynthia Barnes, for sharing her insights with us today. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to this podcast, Sales Enablement with Andy Paul, on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. So thank you for that. And thank you so much for investing your time with me today. Until next time, I'm your host, Andy Paul. Good selling, everyone.
Hey, sales strategists. At Revenue.io, we're not just imagining the future of sales, we're building it. We offer the world's most complete platform for revenue teams, and we're featured in the most recent Forrester Waves for both sales engagement and conversation intelligence. With Revenue.io, you can slash call prep time to seconds, guide your reps in real time to have more successful conversations, and after calls, we generate ready-to-send recap emails so sellers can keep deals soaring toward the finish line at light speed. See the future of sales now at Revenue.io.